This is a CHLY podcast, listener-supported in Nanaimo, funded with support from the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Welcome to Students in the Know, CHLY's weekly news magazine program presented by our Student News Collective, researched and hosted by VIU students, and funded by the CRFC. Students in the Know is now on the air. I'm your host, Matthew Hoffman, along with Mick Sweetman for today's show on Students in the Know. As COVID-19 is impacting many people, Mick Sweetman speaks with Dr. Paul Hasselbeck, Medical Health Officer for Nanaimo, Oceanside, and Alberni, Clayquote. Mick also talks to Unitarian Shelter on how the homeless are impacted by COVID-19. VIU is also launching an emergency bursary program that aims to help students in need. I will provide our sports segment. For our entertainment news, we'll hear from poet and author Kim Goldberg on her new book, De-Evolution. And I will also provide us with our entertainment news. Then I will provide us with our 7-day forecast and close with a reporter's playground. Now for our top stories.
Your top stories on Students in the Know.
Dr. Paul Hasselbeck is a medical officer of health for the Mid-Island area. I spoke with him about what needs to be done to keep people safe and protect the vulnerable.
As the medical officer of health for the Nanaimo area, what further actions do you think the city and regional governments of Nanaimo can take?
I've been able to stay in contact with the regional district and the city of Nanaimo and other communities, do so on a regular basis. Certainly that they have established their emergency operations center. I'm aware of that. They are maintaining critical infrastructure. We've also talked about how else can we provide support to groups that are underserved, such as those that are challenged in terms of housing. I think we've got an issue in terms of some of our food support programs. I've also talked to them about what can they do about supporting members of the community by staying socially connected without being physically present. And is there anything that we can do about activating people, because this is a tough time for those who are in isolation. So there's lots of roles to be undertaken, and I know they're at least considering them.
So yesterday, Dr. David Forrest, who's an infectious disease specialist at Nanaimo General Regional Hospital, yeah, I posted a video to Facebook that's been shared thousands of times. I just want to play a short clip for you.
In the news, you've seen what's happening other places. The burden on our healthcare system will be massive and overwhelming. We are worse off in Nanaimo because we only have about 4.5 ventilator ICU beds per 100,000 people. That's far less than there are in the rest of the Western world, far less than there are in Italy, where their healthcare system has been massively overwhelmed.
Would you be able to respond to his concerns?
Actually, I'm not the one who is involved in this physical infrastructure. And I know, Mick, that the province has responded to in response to what the overall capacities are. The medical health officer's job is to try to keep everybody healthy. I have worked very closely with the facilities in the area that I work in to be sure they're as prepared as they can. But it's the facilities in conjunction with the overall island health response, which is a massive response at this point in time. And when we get to the details, that's not something I can comment on. That's something that I'm actually not involved with.
Thank you very much for that. There's also a lot of concern about what's being done for the homeless population in Nanaimo.
Yeah, Island Health has been working really closely with our partners who provide services to those that are housing insecure. That may be shelters, that may be the supportive housing. We're actually reaching out now with some of our food support groups as well. I'm hearing a great deal about more hunger on the street. Some of the services are not being continued. We've seen other communities where they've actually been decreased, despite the fact this is a highly vulnerable population with lots of underlying concerns and the potential to be vectors because of the challenge in providing social isolation. We are actively involved in discussions with the city about how can we best address this issue. And that's not just here, that's in most communities.
So as you know, this is the second provincial health emergency. There's also the ongoing overdose crisis. One of the things that's happened, I think, because of the decrease in shipping to North America, is that the street supply of opioids is becoming scarce, and people are starting to take more risks to go out and get drugs. What can be done right now in terms of prescription alternatives and maybe changing prescribing practices?
Yeah, you're actually flagging a really important component, except I'd say we're actually into a third crisis, the second crisis being the housing crisis that has never been formally declared. If we could solve that one, it would solve a lot of other issues as well. I am aware, and I've spoken with my law enforcement colleagues as well as others, that there is concern about the continuity of supplies of substances coming into the area. We're certainly monitoring the overdose situation very carefully because the potential exists that a contaminated supply or an altered supply would result in changes. We're also monitoring for withdrawal symptoms. We have additional supports out there, the best that we can, for those individuals that are currently still using substances or who are having challenges to obtain those substances. And that includes supporting individuals should they choose to get on treatment.
What should people in Nanaimo be doing right now?
Okay, the most important thing for everyone out there is to recognize how severe a situation we are in and to limit the amount of possibility that they're going to spread an organism or contract it. So that means limiting the interactions with everybody except perhaps those in your own household. That's the duration, the frequency, and the number of times that you come in contact with others within a 2-meter space. If you can do that, we will all get through this. The second thing is if you are sick, please, please stay home, stay isolated, stay by yourself. Even the mildest respiratory symptoms at this point in time potentially could be COVID, and we have to do everything we possibly can to prevent and stop the further spread of this particular organism. Everybody wash their hands. If you're going to cough, do so in your sleeve. If you are having symptoms, get a mask, put a mask on. Even if you put a scarf or a shirt over your face, it's going to be better than coughing out into the open air.
Thank you very much for your time, Dr. Halstead.
Okay, Mick.
All the best to you and your staff.
Okay, thanks very much. Take care.
While people are being told to stay home, some people have no home to stay in. I spoke with Lois Peterson, Executive Director of the Unitarian Shelter in Nanaimo, about how the pandemic is affecting people who are experiencing homelessness.
What's being done to enforce physical distancing in the shelters?
It's a challenge, the whole concept of social distancing in shelters. Our own shelter is we house 30 people a night in one combined space where we also serve meals and things like that. So the most we're able to do in terms of social distancing is make sure people are aware that they need to create as much distance as they can between people and to help kind of share the information about what they might do once they go out onto the street, because they're only with us overnight, and then in the morning they leave to spend their days however they spend them. So in terms of the shelter, what we've had to do is, you know, we've enhanced health and sanitation and hygiene practices. We've got deeper cleaning going on, so at least we're creating an environment that's safer once they're there. And then all we can do is share the same information that basically everybody has about the need to create some kind of distance between each other.
Right. So the physical distancing that's recommended by public health is at least 2 meters or 6 feet?
No. Our beds are close together, probably closer than that, certainly. We're limited by the space. I mean, the challenges we face is if we limit the number of people in the shelter in order to create more space, then we're able to accommodate less people who need it. So it's a balance. We're constantly having to make hard decisions about how we help people given the limits that we have.
Great. Go ahead, sorry.
The 6 foot, the 2 meter, I mean, even I've watched people on the street forget how to do it and what to do, and it's, you know, as I say, we recommend that people observe the kind of space that they have between each other, but there is certainly not 6 foot between every guest using our shelter for the 12 hours that we operate.
All right. So you just kept the capacity of the shelter the same?
We've reduced it marginally, and largely that was some small measure of increasing the space between people, but also the goal at this point is so that we can create a little bit of a buffer. If we have people with symptoms, whether it could just be the normal flu and cold season symptoms, but it may potentially be COVID-19 symptoms, we can at least have an area where we have a little bit more of a buffer than we might have. So at this point, we've gone from 30 beds a night to 28, just so that we're able to create a bit of extra space and designate areas for people who potentially might be more contagious.
Can you tell me what that looks like? Is that area for people who are symptomatic?
It's just a spot that's got two beds separated from the main area, but it's still in the same area. We have a single room that we use. It's a basement of a church, of the Unitarian Fellowship. Mm-hmm. So there's no separate area. It's a space with two beds that are removed from the main body, but there's still limited space between them. So we acknowledge that, you know, if we were to be able to enforce 6 feet between people, not only would we probably have to limit our occupancy by at least 50%, we'd also have to stand over people all the time and say, you know, you can stand there and you can stand there and you can stand there. It's nigh on impossible in most shelter settings, from what I understand from other agencies too. And also, we're looking potentially at the one thing we have to do in our shelter is not only keep our guests safe, but our staff safe. And if we have staff going down with illnesses and having to excuse themselves from work, there's going to be even more limited resources to work with.
Can I just ask you, how are you ensuring your staff stay safe if you're letting, you know, symptomatic people come into the shelter?
Well, we've always let people with colds and flu and sniffles and stuff into the shelter, so we've never excluded people unless they were obviously very ill and needed medical treatment that we weren't able to provide just by providing shelter. With our staff, what we're doing is reinforcing over and over again our own internal sanitation and hygiene practices and making sure that we continue to reinforce the idea that they have to stay safe outside as well to reduce the potential of bringing in any contagion into the shelter.
Like, what else does need to be done at this point, not only in terms of your shelter, but the shelter system as a whole?
I think we have to find and staff and have a space that we're able to accommodate people. The challenge we have is if we have somebody even who has a bad cold or a flu, at 7 o'clock we turn out in the morning, and we close at 7 in the morning. We're sending people onto the street. And so I think now more than ever, as a region, as a service, we need to be looking for space. We need to be looking for services so that we can accommodate people if they have illnesses, and COVID-19 is the main one, of course, right now. But we need that so that we need to know what the next step is, at least knowing what the options might be.
Is there anything else that you think is really important for people to know?
I think people need to know that we're working really hard to figure out what's the best thing to do for shelter guests, for homeless people in our community and our staff, and to protect the community. We're working as hard as anybody else in trying to mitigate the impact. And, of course, our guests are our primary concern, but also the staff and the community are really important to all of us as well.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
For CHOY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo, this is Mick Sweetman.
I am Matthew Hoffman, reporting for Students in the Know on CHOY Radio 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. As many people are not able to have face-to-face classes, Vancouver Island University students are still working towards completing their education. Although due to the current situation with the COVID-19 pandemic, students face reduced hours or having no employment, finding childcare, and keeping themselves and their families safe and healthy with limited resources. We will speak with VIU Student Union Chairperson Anouk Boers about an emergency bursary that aims to help students in need. Anouk, what is the emergency bursary for?
Well, we're just concerned about students who aren't able to meet their basic needs in this unprecedented crisis, so we're really just wanting to support those students.
And who is eligible to receive the bursary?
Literally any student who's experiencing immediate financial crisis. That could be domestic or international students. We really wanted to make it open to anyone, as our emergency bursary always has been. And so, yeah, we just kept following through with that, with the money we gave for this crisis.
So any student can apply for the bursary?
Yes, that is correct.
How can students apply for the bursaries?
So they would just have to email financialaidinfo@viu.ca and put in a request to access the emergency fund. You need to include your name, your student number, and the reason for need. So it is assessed based on reason for need. So we are trying to prioritize people who have a higher need and really make sure those people who are struggling get what they need to get by through this during this time.
And what would clarify as a student in need?
So it's basically someone who is not able to pay their rent, can't afford food. Like, we want to make sure people have their basic needs taken care of and really ensure that they're not putting themselves at risk because they can't make money at this time.
So how many students are eligible?
There's not a specific number. It's a matter of distributing the funds to people as needed and trying to optimize the money to its best usage, I think.
And what expenses are usually eligible for the bursary?
I think that it's kind of a situation where it's based on the need, from what I understand, and what I've heard from people using it in the past. So if you say, I can't make my rent, I'm short by this much, these are kind of the budget I've laid out for myself, and this is where I'm struggling, they'll look at that and try to give you a dollar amount that will assist you for the things you need.
And when will students start receiving the amounts of money?
I also am not entirely sure on that. I know I just forwarded a student request to financial aid, and they said because they were very busy right now, they were taking about 3 days to respond to emails. I'm not sure how long it would take to have money in your hand at this moment in time.
And can you talk about AIM?
Yeah. So I only know a little bit about AIM, but I know it's a new platform that we started at VIU, and I know that I've talked to William Litchfield about it briefly, and he said he was really excited because right now they have only a few people working in their office, so this gives them a way to have individuals who are passionate start up their own crowdfunding campaign and get money donated to a cause that they're passionate about without having to go through the foundation in a less direct way, I suppose. So it's kind of nice because it just allows more people to be involved and getting their circles involved with crowdfunding.
And was there anything that we didn't cover that you'd like to mention?
Yeah, I think so. Just a little bit of the history of the bursary. So just for your information, the Students' Union contributes $5,000 annually to this emergency fund, which is matched by $5,000 from the province. So we have an annual ongoing contribution to this bursary. We really do want to be supporting students all the time for emergencies, and then we topped it up with the $75,000 for this ongoing crisis.
Great, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
I also spoke with William Litchfield, who is the executive director for the VIU Foundation, regarding questions on the amount students will be able to receive and when they will be able to receive the amounts for the support they need. Regarding the foundation and the bursary, can you just tell me about it?
Well, we've partnered with the student union to be able to enhance our student emergency fund so that we can get funds to students in very short order so that they're able to bridge any gaps in their funding with loss of jobs and just the way the world is today, that we're trying to help those students out as quickly as we can.
And when will students be able to apply and obtain the amount of money that would be delivered to them?
The applications are open right now, so it's an easy process just to connect with the financial aid office, and then we're trying to process them as quickly as possible. We typically do a couple of check runs a week, so hopefully some students will start seeing money before the end of this week.
And do we know how much money a student is eligible for?
Typically, it'll be in the range of $250 to $500 right now.
Okay, and is that per month or just right now?
Right now, it's a one-time, hopefully, to be able to bridge some of the gap until some of the provincial and federal funds can come in. But then students, if there's continuing and ongoing need, we'd look at that as well. It's all based on what dollars we can raise. So the student union has set a very high leadership gift in putting $75,000 towards this campaign. The VIU Foundation has matched that. And now we're going out to the community to try and find about another $100,000 so that we can support our students. In the last probably 2 days, there's been, I'd say, over 300 applications into the fund. So we're going through the process as quickly as we can to get the funds into the hands of students.
And regarding the community, how can the community help donate?
Right from the VIU Foundation webpage, so giving.viu.ca. They can make their gift online. They can also share that information through their networks with their family and friends who may be interested in supporting students as well. And any amount helps. It's going into a larger pot, so if it's a gift of $10 or $20, that's great. And if it's a larger gift, that goes even farther to support our students.
And was there anything that you would like to discuss that we didn't cover?
We know it's a difficult time for everybody in the community and across the country and the globe. And we're just asking those who have the ability to support those who are in a position where they've lost their jobs, they're having a challenge to pay for their rent or pay housing, put food on the table for their families. And we're trying to help students when they're at their most vulnerable.
Vancouver Island University Student Union is providing a leadership gift of $75,000, which will be matched by the VIU Foundation to help establish a $2,500,000 fund for emergency student bursaries. Anouk Boris is hoping community members will join the student union in donating if they are able to. For Students in the Know on CHOR Radio 101.7 FM in Nanaimo, I am Matthew Hoffman.
Your top stories on Students in the Know. The Sports Report on Students in the Know.
The inevitable has happened for the last big question mark in the world of sports. The International Olympic Committee announced Tuesday a first-of-its-kind postponement of the Summer Olympics due to the coronavirus pandemic, CBC News reports. The Games were to begin in Japan this July, but officials are now aiming for the summer of 2021 and no later. The IOC's and Japan's organizing officials have been under significant pressure from media, athletes, and organizations to follow suit with the rest of the world and suspend or cancel the Games. Many are confronting the reality that training and qualifying schedules, to say nothing of international anti-doping protocols, have been ruptured beyond repair. Among the voices calling for the postponement, the Canadian Olympic Committee and Canadian Paralympic Committee said Sunday evening they wouldn't send athletes to compete in Tokyo this summer. Canada was the first nation to formally announce its athletes would stay home, with Australia becoming the second on Monday. Dick Pound, a Canadian member of the IOC, said the committee was concerned over the growing infection rates of the coronavirus. The IOC has been working with the World Health Organization to convince Japanese organizers delaying the games was the right decision. Pound said it was a difficult decision for the Tokyo organizers. "I think they have more skin in the game," he said. "They've been preparing for a decade and investing heavily in all this. I think they are more concerned with the matter of face than perhaps other cultures would be." That said, they're not stupid and they're not unmindful of what's going on all around. Canadian athletes and from around the world were in support of the COC's decision. Canadian ice hockey legend Haley Wickenheiser sent in her support in a tweet Sunday evening saying, "Leading the world, very proud of Canada." Wrestler Erica Weeb, who won one of Canada's four gold medals in the 2016 Rio Games, said, "I'm heartbroken by the COC decision to not send athletes to a 2020 Olympic Games, but I admire their leadership in this moment in time, and I believe we are standing on the right side of history." After hearing the IOC's decision to postpone, Weep told CBC News she felt relief, excitement, and uncertainty. "We'll be more ready than ever in 2021 and wearing the maple leaf with more pride than I thought was possible," she said. Further closures from the city of Nanaimo have been announced in efforts to slow the spread of COVID-19, Nanaimo News Now reports. All of the city's outdoor sports courts, skate parks, bike parks, and gated dog parks are closed indefinitely. However, parks and open trails will remain open. The move follows images of a basketball game being played at Maffield Sutton Park surfacing on social media, drawing criticism. This new round of closures is added to the city's decision to shut down all playgrounds and indoor recreation facilities. Lastly, tragic news for the city of Nanaimo and the sporting community. Phil Olson, Canada's greatest javelin thrower, a mentor to countless Nanaimo high school kids, died Sunday, March 15th, at the age of 63. The Time Colonist reports. Olson was out collecting firewood with his wife Nancy when he suffered a massive coronary. Olson was Canada's greatest javelin thrower and competed in the 1976 Montreal Summer Olympics, where he placed 11th at just 19 years of age. and he won gold in the 1978 Edmonton Commonwealth Games. When he won gold in Edmonton, the Queen even touched him on his arm, saying, "Good job, Master Olsen. You represented your country so well." But most around Nanaimo know Phil Olsen from his 30-plus years as a teaching assistant at Woodland Secondary, Nanaimo District Secondary, and most recently, Wellington Secondary. Nanaimo teacher and Olsen's good friend, Brian Lennox, remembers his friend always having a smile on his face. "Phil was a very open, gregarious, and energetic individual," said Lennox. "This open, enthusiastic personality was infectious on the students he taught, and his impact on them was profound." Nancy said about his mentorship, "He was a friend and a help to so many of them. A good inspiration and role model. Just like things from getting students off cigarettes, he loved the students and made a difference. Some have said they wouldn't have graduated without him. He was always upbeat and loved trying to make a difference in their lives." Another Nanaimo teacher and friend, James Cox, echoed the praise, saying Phil had such kindness, lovingness, and patience with those students, and was so uplifting to them that they would seek him out. Olsen has impacted many with his athletic accomplishments, and more importantly, his kindness. Many will also miss him. A celebration of life is planned in Nanaimo, at a date to be announced.
The Sports Report on Students in the Know.
I am Matthew Hoffman, reporting for Students in the Know on CHOY Radio 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. Nanaimo poet and author Kim Goldberg has released her new book, De-Evolution, this month, and she is here to discuss her new book and what made her want to write it. So, Kim, thank you for coming on to the show. What made you want to write this book?
Well, thank you very much for having me on your show, Matthew. The poems in De-Evolution, the poems and fables about basically planetary collapse, ecocatastrophe, end of the earth, it does sound pretty dire, but yet they're in an absurdist, surrealist, often fantastical tone, so that takes it off in a different direction. Anyway, I've been working on these for about 10 years, and then here we finally come up to, or very close to, the date of my planned launch of this book after 10 years in the making, and then published just this month of March by Caitlin Press, and ready to launch on World Poetry Day, and then everything's canceled due to global pandemic, of course. So not only was my own launch canceled, all the libraries everywhere were closed where readings and literary events might occur. So I don't know. Do we have a case of life imitating art? It was the irony is almost a little too cutting for me to know what to do about it. But we're doing radio interviews and other sorts of things that can be done with social distancing.
Does your book talk about these sort of pandemics or things?
Well, basically, the whole book is about the world falling apart in one way or another, falling apart at a planetary level, and how this has sort of come about in terms of our own contribution as a species, the way we've sort of fallen apart societally, and then the impact that that has on the planet. So there is more than a little irony that a book of fables and poems about planetary collapse ended up being canceled, or at least the public presentation of it, due to global pandemic. But yes, that's the way it went. And, you know, as things got the worst the world situation gets, in my own writing, that sort of gets filtered and sifted through my brain in such a way that things just get wilder, weirder, more ridiculous. They don't really get darker and gloomier, because that's not really the type of writing I want to do. It just gets translated into my brain with some sort of absurdism algorithm and goes out into the land of the bizarre and the surreal. So surrealism is a big theme throughout this book.
You mentioned that there's poems in this book. Can you tell us why you chose to write poems?
Well, that is a very difficult question for me to know the answer to, because I've supported myself my entire life for my writing, but for the first half of my adult life, at least as a writer, it was journalism. It was investigative journalism on environmental issues, social justice issues, political issues, media concentration issues and media bias issues. So I did a lot of very straightforward journalistic writing, and then never ever wrote poetry or what might be called any form of creative writing. And then my mind went into some sort of a Tai Chi coma where I got very immersed in studying martial arts and Taoism, and no words came out at all, and then went for a long time. And then when the words returned, they returned only as poems. There was no more nonfiction or journalism or news reporting voice left in me. It only came out as poems and bizarre fables, absurdist fables. So it's been poetry and fables ever since. So I don't understand the process myself, but I'm just rolling with it.
And can you tell us a poem?
Sure, I'd be glad to. This poem from the book, from Devolution, actually the first poem in the book, is called Atlantis. In the lost city of Atlantis, we drift from god to god. The animals on display have slipped their feathered cages and gilt chains. The big top sits empty, not even a flea in the matchbox seats. It was tricky at first, a skid through marbles on the curve. The swift departed in ash plume, rising from the lacerated rim of our existence. They took the night with them. We now know, through inductive reasoning and computer simulations, that the Swifts were the night. And with night comes sleep, and with sleep, dreams. You see where this narrative of privation is leading. Wait, there, behind the goat-shaped cloud, I think I see another god. So that's Atlantis from the opening poem of my book, Devolution, where pretty much anything can happen and society is falling apart and the planet along with it.
If you're just tuning in, I am Matthew Hoffman on Students in the Know on CHY Radio 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. And today we are speaking with Kim Goldberg on her new book, De-Evolution. And does the book cover on how we can build society back up?
Well, I think that's going to be up to each one of us to figure that out either individually or collectively. I am a big believer in harnessing creative energy and each one of us tapping into our own creative energy, however we might do that and however we define that, and then manifesting that creative energy. Who knows what that could be? That could be a whole neighborhood where gardens or front yards have been turned into gardens. It could be a whole transformation of news media where all news articles are now written as poems. We don't really know. We don't really know what form it will take, but I have always believed that creative energy and creative manifestation is the way out, is the solution to any and every problem. So that's basically where I would leave it. I would leave it up to everybody to try to find a way to tap their own creative energies, because ultimately that's what each of us is creative energy. And it's up to us to sort of get in touch with that and find a way to direct it.
And I understand you had a book release coming up?
I did, but of course it got canceled due to the global pandemic, along with every author's book release and reading. So it's hard to know when I will actually be able to celebrate the launch of this thing in a real-world fashion instead of just a virtual fashion. People can, if people are really interested, they actually can get the book. They can get it through the publisher, Caitlin Press, which is a good independent BC literary press. And, I can't even say whether it's in stores, because my sense is that bookstores may be closed or closing soon. I mean, most of us have never really lived through anything like what we're just on the cusp of right now with this global pandemic and all of the closures that are being necessitated by it.
Was there anything that we didn't cover that you'd like to discuss?
Well, no, I think we pretty much got it. I was working away for 10 years on poems about the state, the rather, deplorable state of the planet, deplorable and descending, and then finally pulled it all together into a book that then had to be postponed due to global pandemic. But the book actually physically does exist, and I would love to see people get access to it. And so let's just hope that at some point when we aren't also socially distanced, there will be a way for that to happen.
Well, I do want to thank you for coming on the show today, Kim.
Well, thank you very much, Matthew, for having me.
BC Local News reports the book is filled with a diverse collection of poetry about the environment, technology, and also ways people can relate to themselves and the world. For Students in the Know on CHOY Radio 101.7 FM in Nanaimo, I'm Matthew Hoffman.
Your entertainment news on Students in the Know.
This is your entertainment news. With the spike in COVID-19 cases and stricter regulations, the entertainment and arts industry has been hit hard. Cineplex is closing theaters in Canada while Cirque du Soleil is laying off 95% of its workforce. More events including the Cannes Film Festival and Daytime Emmys have been cancelled or postponed. Big Brother Canada and The Walking Dead are ending production early on their latest seasons. More public figures have tested positive for the coronavirus, including Prince Charles, Placide Domingo, and Harvey Weinstein. The virus has also claimed the lives of people like Tony Award-winning playwright Terrence McNally and Cameroonian saxophonist Manu Dibango. However, there is also some encouraging and hopeful news. French designers Yves Saint Laurent and Balenciaga are switching productions to surgical masks in response to the growing demands. Canadian publishers are also offering discounts on ebooks, and more celebrities including BTS, Mariah Carey, Billie Eilish are reaching out to fans through social media. There are also some writing contests open to people on Vancouver Island. The Nanaimo BCSPCA is hosting a youth poetry contest in celebration of its 125th anniversary. While the Yellow Point Drama Group and Western Edge Theatre are looking for script submissions from island playwrights. We'll end this report with some sad news from last week. Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter and actor Kenny Rogers died on Friday, March 20th, at the age of 81. He was in hospice in Sandy Springs, Georgia, and his death was not related to COVID-19. Rogers was a member of the folk group New Christie Minstrels for nearly 10 years before going solo with hits like Luchill, The Gambler, Lady, and Islands in the Stream, his duet with Dolly Parton. He also starred in TV movies inspired by The Gambler, published several books, including his autobiography, Making It With Music, and co-founded the restaurant chain Kenny Rogers Roasters. Rogers was inducted in the Country Hall of Fame in 2013. And that's your entertainment news.
Your entertainment news on Students in the Know. The 7-day forecast on Students in the Know.
For your 7-day forecast, today it is raining with a high of 9 and a low of 4. For Friday, there will be rain with a high of 9 and a low of 5. Moving towards the weekend, there will be a high of 11 and a low of 4 with more rain on Saturday. Sunday will also have rain with a high of 11 and a low of 3. Starting the work week, there will be a high of 10 and a low of 4 with some more rain on Monday. Tuesday will also have some rain with a high of 10 and a low of 3. Wednesday calls for more rain and a high of 9 and a low of 2. Thursday will also have rain with a high of 9 and a low of 4.
Reporters Playground, a panel discussion opinion piece offering different perspectives on this week's stories. The opinions expressed in this segment are not necessarily the opinion of CHLY. Reporters Playground on Students in the Know.
For Reporters Playground, I do want to just mention that I'm saddened by the passing of Phil Olson. He was a big role model in my life when I was growing up in high school. He would be there. He's the one that actually taught me how to like go to the gym and be able to work out, as he was an athlete and he was a role model. He used to help people, helped a lot of people graduate. I know for me, I was able to graduate and do what I love today and continue my education, which is very important. If anybody knows him in the community, knows how he impacted everyone, I do want to, my heart goes out to him and his family and anyone that is struggling with it, with this passing.
Reporters Playground, a panel discussion opinion piece offering different perspectives on this week's stories. The opinions expressed in this segment are not necessarily the opinion of CHLY. Reporters Playground on Students in the Know.
I would also like to thank everyone for listening and thank Mick Sweetman for his reporting, Sean DeRoche for writing the sports segment, and Sophia Wasilinko for writing the entertainment news. Tune in every Thursday for Students in the Know on CHOY Radio 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. You have been listening to Students in the Know on CHOY Radio 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. Tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. for your weekly dose of local, national, and international news. Students in the Know on CHOY.